Hi, everyone. Russ Thomas here from RST Coaching Academy. Welcome to a new episode of Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it.
Good morning, everybody. Russ here from Daytona Beach, Florida, RST Coaching Academy, sponsor of Money Talks. Lovely day here in Daytona Beach. We don't have any snow on the ground. It's above freezing, so we're all happy and toasty and roasty. But we're here today to interview a new friend of mine, Tracy Stern from Virginia Beach, Virginia. This lady has got quite a background of international market. She's an international model. She turned into a residential renovator and designer. She's been a business owner for 25 years. I can't wait to hear how she went from a model to a residential renovator and designer, all in this 25 year plus period of time. So Tracy, glad to have you with us today. We're excited to listen to you and see you, hear your story, where you've come from, how in the heck you got all this meandering through life to where you're at right now, and what you're going to share with our audience, and ultimately offer some advice to people that are maybe just starting out, or maybe they've been doing business for a while and they're struggling. You can offer some advice. So Tracy, take it away.
Good morning, Russ. Thank you so much for having me this morning. I'm excited.
Good.
Yeah. So yeah, my background, it's not a natural transition for most models to get into the construction industry. So I love telling the story. I think up until 8 years ago, I don't think I'd ever even used a drill. So high heels I've mastered, but. So where did it start? Well, let's see, a little bit about me. I'm a native Canadian, born and raised in Canada. My dad was a Mountie. We moved kind of all over the Great Lakes area of Ontario. And about 1996, I moved to Chicago with Elite Model Management. And that was during the introduction of the plus size modeling industry. So I'd actually, I was one of the, I call it a second generation plus size model. So we had our first supermodels come in, kind of open the door for us. And then my generation of model came in and sort of took it to the next level. And now it's a more accepted form of modeling, and there's more plus size supermodels in the industry and things like that. So I started doing that, traveled the world, and I did that all through my 20s up until I was about 29. And then I met my ex-husband in Australia, and I became a mom, and I have two amazing boys. They're 19 and 16. And so I kind of stepped back from the in front of the camera position, and I moved into more of the production side of it. So I started hosting events, doing live shows. I was doing improv TV programming. I did some independent films. So I kind of started dipping my toes in a little bit more of that entertainment side. So I always kept my hand or my foot in the business. It just necessarily wasn't always as a model. I became more of that next level or, production side of it.
Producer in the modeling industry.
Correct. Yeah. So, producing events, producing shows, hiring the models. So I became, the employer instead of the employee. I had a modeling agency for a very brief amount of time and realized that was not my calling at all. That was not where my strengths lied. My ex and I had kind of a retirement plan, and I started getting into rehabbing houses in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia. And while I was doing that, I was on the job site and I was doing some painting and I was doing micromanaging the subcontractors. I was purchasing materials. I was designing the space. And I was like, I'm pretty good at this. Maybe I should look at this as post-retirement from, the fashion industry. And so that's what I did. I went back to trade school at 47. So I'm 51 now. So I went back to trade school And I learned all about basic HVAC. I did electrical, plumbing, carpentry, some basic roofing, tiling. And then that kind of started my journey of transferring and moving into this renovation world that I live in full time now.
Cool. 47, career change,
Yes.
big career change.
Yes.
So
Huge.
much so that you said, I got to go to school. I got to learn
Yeah.
what I'm doing. And did you struggle with that given your age at the time, or did people struggle with you doing so given the age at your time at the time?
The school that I had gone to, it was a trade school. So you kind of have a lot, you had a lot of various ages in the class. So we have a very heavy military veteran presence here, and the military offers a GI Bill. And so when a lot of veterans get out, they need to use that GI Bill up or they're going to lose the benefits. And so you see a lot of them, you know, in their 40s, even coming and going, and trade school is a great one to use it at. So I wasn't the oldest one in the class, which was kind of neat, but I had not been in school since I was 18. And it took me a little bit to get adjusted to sitting in a classroom. I was in the class 6 hours a day. So I went from being technically a stay-at-home mom, raising my children, and then doing this transition into 6 hours a day of school, learning subjects that I didn't know the first thing about. And every trade has a language. It's like going to a foreign country. Every country has a language. And in order to be able to speak properly and associate yourself with the community, you've got to know how to talk to them. And so when you're working in the trades, it's the same thing. HVAC has a language. Plumbers have a language,
Every
electricians,
industry does, yeah.
right? And they all call things differently. And that's one of the main reasons. So I didn't go to trade school so that I could physically do the work. I love doing that, but I'm not a DIY personality. I would rather make more money and pay someone else to do the work. So but now I know how to talk to my plumber. Now I know how to talk to my electrician. And that's primarily why I went back to school, was so that I could learn the language of the trades in order to do my job better for my clients.
Well, that's great. When my first business was a gas station in Madison, Wisconsin in 1973. I was out of college for 3 years at that time, had a business degree in management, and I had to deal with, you have a college degree, Russ. What are you doing owning a gas station? So I had to
Right.
overcome that in my mind in order to make that move into that. But honestly, that was the start of my what I call addiction to business in
Right.
my first business 50 years ago. And so you probably had a little transition there. I mean, I'm a model, I'm a mom, what am I doing here? But it's you're driven by your passion and said, well, I can really do this, right? You had that mindset set in your mind that I can do this. All I need to do is acquire the information to make me successful, to help me become successful, right? And so after you did that, it was probably an easy flow, except learning the discipline of 6 hours of school and doing the homework and that kind of thing.
It was really, really fascinating. I had no idea how much I would fall in love with the trades, and I'm a huge advocate now for getting other women. I mean, owning a business is not easy. It doesn't matter what field you're in, but as a woman working in the trades and earning the respect of a male-dominated industry, and it's not a The trades is a very interesting male-dominated industry because you have a multitude of personalities. You've got the old salty dog contractors that, you know, just they have their ways and they're a little, you know, salty, a little growly when you deal with them. And getting them to respect a woman, and you know, I don't want to pull any of the, you know, the woman card or the woe is me kind of stuff, but it's really interesting when you walk into a space and it's a bunch of men and they don't know me, and I present myself still very fashionable. So I still have a lot of fashion sense about me because I, you know, it's in my DNA at this point. I've been doing it so long. And so when I present myself as I do on a job site, you already have the stereotypical trades personality of sitting on the sidelines whistling. Well, now I'm in their space and I'm talking to them in their language. And it's an interesting visual. It's an interesting reaction that I get. And it took me a while to earn the respect, but I have a team now of, and it's, they're men. I only have one female that I work with in the trades, but the rest of the tradesmen that I work with in the different fields, they're all men, but they all respect me. And so when I refer them out to clients or we're working on a job, they know exactly who's running the ship. So,
wow. Yeah. Well, getting past stereotypes and prejudices in any field can be a challenge. And this one, like you say, male dominated. My son is a licensed, he's an electrician with the, what is it? The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. So he's union all the way. And there's a male dominated thing. There's hardly, probably no women in that field at all. And so you've got to, it really makes you or breaks you. I imagine some people may have, some women may have started out and they just couldn't cut it. Have you run across any like that that said, I just can't handle the static. I can't handle the cat calls and the whistles and the disrespect, you know? Is that, have you run across that have been, women that have been in that ship, in that boat?
Not in the trades. I find that the female personality for women getting into the trades, they're definitely a different breed. They are, they're a lot tougher mentally. They already know what they're up against coming into it, whether it's welding, HVAC. We have the shipyards here in the Hampton Roads area where they repair the naval ships. Mm-hmm. And so we have one of the largest welding communities that work on these ships. And there's a lot of women, it's proven, and you can even talk to some welding instructors who's ever taught, but women are actually like fantastic and almost superior in the welding world.
Huh.
And, but coming into a job site, I can't imagine how difficult it was for the first women to come into that, being one out of maybe 50 or 75 welders on a job site, or, you know, and being the only female, you kind of have to, if you can't beat them, join them mentality. So a lot of the women that I know that are working in the trades, they're pretty tough. So it's not easy, and they have to work twice as hard to get the same accolades, unfortunately, but they know what they're getting into when they come into it.
Yeah, I think you hit it right off when you said they're mentally tough and tough mentally and probably tough skinned too to handle all that abuse, shall we say. Yeah. So
yeah, there's no such thing as an HR department in the trades.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go and you know, I'm sure there's some companies out there that are, you know, contracting companies that have, but you know, if you're a woman in the trades, I hate to use the word like, you know, sexual harassment, or, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. Is it right? No. Is it insulting? Yeah. Is it disrespectful? Of course. But you should hear how the men talk to each other on a job site. You know, so if you want to be a part of that community, you have to be willing to accept the pros and the cons. And it's just like any business out there, even in the modeling world is not all, you know, diamonds and fashion clothing and designers and exotic trips. It's derogatory as well. It's disrespectful as well. Models are the bottom of the totem pole in the fashion industry. Hmm. So, you know, I guess I just became accustomed to understanding how to read a room. And when to say enough is enough, you know, you kind of have to pick your battles. And I think in a lot of companies, it's the same. And I think women across the board understand you have to pick your battles. So.
Yeah. And be ready to defend yourself when necessary. But as gracefully as you can, I suppose. And you know, my son, when he was in high school, he was schooled by my wife for a number of years, and then it was time to put him in public school, high school, and the kids were bugging him because he was the new kid in town,
Right.
you know, and we lived in a small community of less than 2,000, so he was the new kid. And Ryan, my son, is a he's a quiet, reserved young man, and so kids were bugging him, and he was just basically taking it, you know. And I said to him, there was a this was back in the day of a particular deodorant commercial that was, they said, never let them see you sweat. Use their deodorant, you know. Well, so I
Right.
turned that on him and I said, never let them see you sweat. Don't let them, don't give them the satisfaction of knowing that you're hitting, that they're hitting a button and they're causing distress in your mind and your emotions or whatever. Just keep on going. Never let them see you sweat. And so that helped get him through. Another thing that helped him get through was when I told him, I says, you know, you can fight back. These kids are picking on you. You can fight back. Well, he finally did one day, and the kid that he fought back with, they became best friends. So you just never know. But the thing is, never let them see you sweat. And you basically had to overcome that yourself, maybe, and not those particular words, but that was the thing, is you know who you are, you know what you're about, you know what you can do, and don't let the naysayers hurt
Right.
you. Yeah, don't let them win.
Absolutely.
Yeah, don't let them win. So yeah, you know, I didn't mean to talk about the women in business and the trade so much, but that's really a big thing, isn't it? Women in business,
Absolutely.
in general, whether it's a trade related industry or anything else, that's quite a challenge to get through. And it does take that mental toughness. So it is what it is. You know, like you said, is it right? No. Is it there? Is it happening? Yes. You know, what are you going to do? You know, you just got to plow through it, and eventually the tides will probably turn. And like what you did, you just kept going and you proved yourself to these people, these, you know, naysayers, shall we say, and proved yourself that you know what you're doing, you know what you're talking about. And ultimately, in the long run, you know, if they got any kind of an open mind, they would see what Tracy is and what Tracy can do, and then
Right.
signed on with you, basically, you know, accepted you into the end of the world. So currently you're doing the residential renovation and the designing. Now, the designing, is that designing the renovations that you do?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I work with I'm partnered with a class A contractor, and my specialty is bathroom renovation. So I work in the bathroom renovation space, and that's pretty much what I do full time. And then I also consult. So I have real estate agents that I talk to and consult with. I have private clients that get referred to me through my circle that need assistance in either, looking at a renovation, letting them know exactly what to expect so that when they do, if they bring in a contractor, they understand what that contractor should be selling them. Oops, my you hear my pit bull in the background. He is howling at the ambulance. Casper, honey. Oh, come here. Yes, I'm so sorry about
Yeah, the interview,
that.
introduce us to the dog. Come on.
That is yes, Casper, come. He, what are you doing? Come here. Yeah, he's a white pit bull terrier, and he when he hears an ambulance, he actually starts to mimic the siren of the ambulance. And so there's an ambulance going down the street by me. And he can hear it because I have the windows open because it's going to be 70 degrees in Virginia Beach today.
Yeah,
So I have my
wow.
windows open.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that is the joy of owning pets is you just kind of, it's like small children. You really can't control them.
Yeah.
You can do the best you can. No, that's it. Sorry about that.
The only thing with the pets over the small children is the small children eventually grow up and they grow out of that. Whereas a pet, it's going to be that way probably for life. So, you know,
Pretty much, pretty
get
much,
used to
pretty
it.
much.
Get used to it. So.
The getting into the women in trades and women in business, you know, the trades industry is growing. And, you know, society, we've been going through this huge push of you need to go to college, you need to go to college, you need to go to college. And there's
what
so much
joke.
Promotion. Yeah, there's so much promotion. There's so much hype and pats on the back for all of these students. And you see it at graduations, you know, like, oh, he's been accepted to and going to, and they're attending this college in the fall and the university of so-and-so. And everybody's like, oh my goodness, so good for you. No, because you know what? 90% of those kids, maybe 85% of those kids are not going to be working in the field of study. And there's going to be like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in debt. And, you know, because most kids, even I, when I was growing up, my dad was a police officer. I was going to become a police officer. And that's what I thought I wanted to do. And then I went on exchange at 18 to Sweden. And I've always wanted to model ever since I was a little girl. That's always been my dream. And, you know, it just so happens that life afforded me the ability to do that. And I had a great time. I had a wonderful life doing that. And excuse me for one second. I'm going to close my window because now I'm okay. I apologize for that. So so I got into the modeling industry and, you know, I was studying criminology in university and I was studying Latin in university and I'm nowhere near any of that. I went into modeling, you know, in the United States, we have, you know, and because I have family in Canada that may listen to the podcast, but we have a 1099 and a W-2, and the W-2 is typically an employee, and a 1099 is a self-employed. Mm-hmm. And I've been a 1099 since I was 23 years old. And I've always run my own business. So even as a model is an independent contractor. They don't work for an agency. Uh-huh. The agency is the middleman. Between the model and the client, they negotiate the rates. They're an agent.
Sure.
So I had to be my own accountant. I had to be my own lawyer. I had to understand how to read contracts. I had to understand what NDA was. I had to understand what marketing usage was. I had to do all of this myself because I didn't have a fortune to be able to pay an attorney to look over my contracts. And so I started out at a very young age in that environment. And, you know, women, we lead commerce. We are the purchasers. We purchase everything for the household. We purchase the groceries, the personal care items, the clothes. Mm-hmm. Most often we're dressing our husbands, our boyfriends, our children, where, you know, the men are the physical laborers and we pretty much do everything else. And so for women to be in business, it's just natural for us to start our own companies and lead because we understand the consumer. And yet if you look at the whole of the commerce industry, it's predominantly dominated by men.
Huh.
And I was actually, I was talking to a fellow business owner the other day about this, that, you know, the modeling industry, the fashion industry is one of the only industries in the world where women make more than men as a norm.
Huh.
And, you know, the reason for me, I believe, is because women are the purchasers. And so we use women to market to us. And that's why the fashion industry and is dominated by women is because we do all the purchasing. So they market to us with a like kind, you know? But yeah, it's one of the only industries where we make more than men on the daily.
Interesting. When you got into modeling and discovered now I'm going to have to learn how to read and understand a contract and do my own accounting and all this, did that come as a shock to you? And you thought, oh, modeling's really cool. All I got to do is put on these new clothes and look pretty and walk the runway, and that's all there is to it. Did it shock you when you realized that there was so much more to it in, I guess you could say, in the administrative aspect than what you ever thought of?
I don't think it was a shock. I think that as I progressively, so when I started out in Toronto, And that's where I first started modeling, was in Toronto, Canada. The industry was very small at the time, so it was a very slow introduction to the business side of it.
And that was the plus. That was the plus side, plus size modeling aspect was the new thing. Yeah.
Right. So you had your traditional models, and traditional models, and this is kind of where the where it gets skewed a lot. You see a lot of consumers complaining about the women, the size of the women that are used in mainstream advertising. And, you know, if you look at it from a business side, because the fashion industry is a business, it's not a girls club. It's a business. There's billions and billions of dollars in this, in the industry. So you look at it from a business point of view, and most designers make one sample of clothing, and they're going to make it in the cheapest fashion. So they're going to make it as small as they possibly can. So if you look at a size zero and you look at a size 18, an 18 is going to take more fabric than a size zero. So it's going to cost more to make a sample.
Oh no, so, really?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, cause you look at it, if you're going to make a concept car, you're going to make a concept car, not necessarily with the finished product options, but you're going to give it as much as you can without putting in the actual cost of manufacturing it.
Sure.
You want to give people the gist of it, right? So when you look at the other industries that are out there, everybody does the same thing. The samples aren't necessarily the market product. They're going to be a sample, an example of what the end product will be. And the fashion industry really isn't that different. They make their sample, they put it on the smallest size hanger that they can find. And that's all models are. This is something that everybody needs to get through their head, is we are just hangers. We literally bring clothes to life. We are just a really fancy hanger.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they find the smallest hanger and they put their clothes on the smallest hanger. But social media and opinions, and the fact that women don't have to write letters to corporations anymore, in about 10 seconds, they can get their point across through social media. It has demanded more equality in the visual aspect on the runway. So what the runway used to be used for, like, you know, if you look at Mercedes, you know, Fashion Week in New York and things like that, it's for them to sell samples to retailers. It's not for the general public to see what's coming. It was generally used to sell samples to, you know, buyers. So just like every end, it's a little skewed, but once you start getting into it, and I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to learning things, I absolutely love and devour knowledge about everything and anything. So the more you get into it, I don't think it was a shock. It was just, I would go through and I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And I would learn that. And then, you know, you go about your business and then something else would present itself and you're like, oh, I need to understand what an NDA is. Oh, so it wasn't everything all at once. It was a progressive education about the industry and understanding the business side of it.
Well, and that kind of, you know, moved over into the residential renovation and design business, because you had some kind of a background there of the administration business side of things. Maybe not specifically the same, but the general concept of what goes on in a business, you know,
you were
a business, you know,
essentially. Yes. I was the product and the business owner.
Yeah. Tracy Stern Incorporated, for example, you know, that was you. And then you taken that experience and put it into the residential thing. You focus on bathrooms.
Right.
What is it about the bathroom that turns you on?
Well, I love any renovation where I have a visual of what the end result is going to look like. And then my team brings it together and I'm like, look at, you know, this is what we started with and look what it became. And it's fun to see the visual in my head come to life. And it's not so much bathrooms. It sort of happened by accident. Prior to COVID, I was renovating houses. I think we had five houses at the time that I was renovating. So I was project managing the different job sites, picking the colors, picking the features, doing the floor, you know, I was designing each different property that we were rehabbing. And when COVID kind of hit, it completely flipped the market upside down. Contractors weren't working, so you couldn't find the help. You couldn't, the material prices went through the roof. And so the house, like, it was just, nobody was going into houses. They were doing everything by video. It was just such a weird time. And it became very inconsistent income for me. And I was also going through a divorce at the time. So you've got this you know, unstable industry, even though I was considered an essential worker, because I was in the construction field, just finding teams that still wanted to work and dealing with the shortage of materials. And just like, it was just this horrible, horrible thing that happened.
Were you having trouble finding people that wanted to work because the government was paying them more money to stay at home back then?
I wasn't personally. It was contractors that wouldn't work. So they were like, we're not putting our crews on job sites. We're not risking their health. So we're shutting down completely.
I see.
Until things get figured out. So you may have had, let's say I had a deck or I had drywall or painting that needed to be done in a property. The contractor would be like, I'm not putting my guys on the job site because I'm not putting them at risk, because nobody understood what the damage would be. So they were like, I'm sorry, we can't do the job anymore. And so they would, and because of COVID, you can't sue them for breach of contract. You can't do any of that because the government was like, sorry, you're shut down. So you couldn't really do anything about it.
Wow.
And so I found myself like, I need to find a job. I need to find something more stable. I need to find a contractor that is still working. And, so I ended up partnering. I went on Indeed and I put my resume out there, and shoot, I didn't even have a resume up until about 4 years ago because I never needed one.
Right. Yeah.
And so I was like, what do I put on my resume? Model? But then, I worked with a couple of people who kind of helped me put down exactly what I did as a model, like my job, and then, talk about going back to school and my trade certifications and just all of that. We figured out how to translate it on a resume. So I sent my resume out and I got a call with a company, and they were looking for a sales rep in the bathroom remodeling field. So I met with them, and I met with a couple of different companies who all work kind of in the same industry. And I fell in love with this particular one because they can remodel the entire bathroom, where a lot of the different companies just focused on the wet space, your bathtub, shower area.
Really?
The company that I work with, we can do the entire bathroom. And I was excited about that because that uses all of my skills. I still get to design. I get to work with my clients. And I've got a 54-year contractor. Like, they've been in business for over 54 years. I have this reputation now with a company that has the stability and security that people are looking for. And so I started working with them. It'll be 3 years this May. And, my team calls me the Taj Mahal sales rep, basically, when I go into a person's home. Because I still do private design, I have a team. I have a carpenter, an electrician, I have a drywall painter. I have all of these different aspects. So if there's things that my team can't do, I can bring the client, my other subs that I work with, and be like, hey, this is going to be a little too big of a project for what my guys can do, but hey, here's a guy who can do it. And then we can come in afterwards and put the finishing touches on it.
Uh-huh.
So I partnered with this company. They're absolutely fantastic. One owner, one general manager, one vice president. It's a family-based company. I absolutely adore them. So I've been working with them, but it's my background in construction and renovations and interior design that have allowed me to be able to go with this company. I can offer things that a typical person can't because of my background. So I'm able to really kind of dig in with my clients and, solve the problems that they have with that wet space. And I've seen some doozies.
So you're really a full service from design to completion.
Correct.
You can do it all. And as you were speaking, I was thinking, I bet this woman is a visual thinker.
You very think much so.
Pictures. And my wife is that way. My son is that way. As as maybe I was describing something, you had a visualization of what I was talking about, or what your client is talking about, or what you're seeing the possibilities of this bathroom, what it can become visually, and there's your start. I don't have that. So
yeah.
I just think, and that's all there is to it, and it's not a masculine or a feminine thing. It's just the way we're wired. It's the way we were made, we either operate this way or that way, but you're unique because you have the ability to think visually and project things and plan things, and that's where your design comes from. But you also have the capability of doing the follow through of garnering the team, the support to actually do the work, and you're overseeing it as the administrator and the boss. I think that's really cool. You've
created a lot of fun
fit for yourself, a great niche in these years.
Well, we had touched on the transition earlier from fashion to renovations to construction. And when I was starting my brand, I was doing my rebranding. I had to figure out a way to blend my two worlds because I had a fan base from my modeling days. So I had already a social media following for that. And I had to get them to accept this new road that I was on. And so my character, I guess, my persona, my work persona is actually the curvy flipper, because I was a plus size model that now flips properties, flips, rooms, flips, so, so I am known as the curvy flipper. That is my handle.
Oh, that's
and that kind of blends my two worlds together. So yeah, so on social media, people can see my work, they can see my designs, but I very much, you've heard of the third eye or something along those lines. That's when people are talking and I look at the space, one of my specialties is the ability to remove walls or put up walls to create new spaces or to use dead space as something new. And that's my specialty. So when I walk into a space, I can be like, yes, we can move this wall. Yes, we can, or no, that's not going to benefit you. It's going to create this issue. It's going to do that. And the hardest thing that I've had to learn how to do is to get the pictures in my head out so that other people can see what I'm seeing and get them to accept my design, because I design outside the box. And one example of that is in my personal residence, my home, I'm remodeling my entire house, and I'm starting on my first floor and I'm working my way up. And so the first level of my home is an open space that used to be the kids' playroom, but now they live in their bedrooms. So I have this great big open space that I've now turned into a bar. So I have a pool table and a bar and a drop-down TV from the ceiling. And then my bathroom downstairs, I have two bedrooms and a bathroom. Well, I'm on a slab. So in Virginia, very similar to Florida, our water table is very high. So we don't have basements in where I live. There are some areas that have basements, but mine doesn't. And I'm on a concrete slab. And so the bathroom downstairs, I actually did epoxy on my floor. And epoxy is very well known for garages. But it's now becoming a little bit more of a full house option. But yeah, I put epoxy in my bathroom instead of putting down tile or luxury vinyl or something along those lines. So I love to design outside the box. I like to mix textures and colors. And the hardest part for me is getting my clients, especially those that are like super conservative or maybe don't know what they don't know, and convincing them that, hey, you know what? Look at this space. Just trust me. Like, that's the hardest thing as a designer is to be like, look, you need to trust me and know that what I'm going to give you is exactly what you're looking for, but it's also going to add to the, your return on investment for your property. Because, people look at their homes and this is their safe space, right? This is their sanctuary. And so they're very attached and guarded when it comes to what happens in those spaces. So
Interesting. Yeah. So projecting what's in your mind, what you see out to the client to sell them on. Tracy knows best. She's got the plan. This is what, and then you've got to sell them. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah,
that can be a challenge, and it may not always work, but you keep trying. So that's really cool. Hey, I've appreciated chatting with you and getting to know you. Very interesting here today. But in the final thing here is somebody's watching today, somebody's listening, and maybe they're thinking about transitioning. Maybe they're, who knows where they're at, but
right.
What would you say? What would you say to someone who is in that position, need some advice, give some advice from Tracy to them as to what could benefit them in their career as an entrepreneur, as a model, tradesman, tradeswoman, whatever. What have you got?
Sure. So a couple of things when I'm mentoring or when I'm coaching somebody, the first thing I say is you need to begin where you want to end up. So if your goal is to be a supermodel, you have to approach the industry with that kind of mentality. You have to approach that industry as if you're already a supermodel. You know, you need to carry yourself like one. You need to dress like one. You need to understand the marketing side of it. So you have to do your research and know where you want to end up so that you know the road to travel to get there. And you need to start carrying yourself that way, if that makes sense. And then the other piece of advice is consistency. People will not accept your position, accept you doing what you're doing if you're not consistent with what you're doing. So for me, when I transitioned from model to curvy flipper, you basically, when you transferred from model to curvy flipper, I had to get people to accept the new me. I had to be consistent. So through all platforms, I had to basically be the curvy flipper on Facebook and be the curvy flipper on Instagram and be the curvy flipper here and be the curvy flipper, you know, so I had to be consistent and understand that people, you know, and be consistent in all the marketing and all the visuals. Like you can't be so-and-so on this and then so-and-so on that. You kind of have to dumb it down for everybody to be able to understand what you're doing and accept you, if that makes sense.
And that's kind of under the heading of branding then too, isn't it?
As you absolutely
branded, you were branded as a model, and now you're transitioning to brand yourself as a business owner, renovator, and
right.
And yeah, if you would have slipped up and not been had that consistency, it may have still worked over the long haul, but it probably would have taken longer because people might have been confused. As to what is
there was definitely exactly. And it's kind of fun because a lot of women who follow me or who knew me before and know me now, I'm a huge advocate for women. Like there's just so many, especially coming out of a divorce at my age and having to, you know, rebrand in that sense too. Like I've rebranded myself multiple times in my 51 years of life. And most of them have taken place in the last 30 years. So it's really difficult for women who are in my position to have that confidence to rebrand. But in order to get people to accept you, you have to present yourself in a confident manner. Like I see women who are selling business coaching or, you know, they're selling lifestyle coaching. And when I meet them, their body language doesn't exude confidence. Their body language, their clothing, their presentation is almost defeated sometimes. And maybe even, I hate to use the term frumpy, but I'm a very, like, I'm a typical A-type personality, but I've learned to be other things because I, you know, being in the fashion industry, you kind of have to be able to adapt and be every kind of personality in order to sell whatever product you're hired to sell. So I've learned very much how to adapt my A-type personality to accommodate different personalities and environments. But when it comes to me, if I'm going to hire a coach, they have to present themselves on an equal platform to me. They can't come to me as this demure kind of, you know, they have to have that confidence. And I think that's one of the biggest thing when you're rebranding or you're a woman in business, especially because our industry, we just don't get the same respect as the male dominated one. And you can see that in most of the posts I see that pop up on Facebook, all the sales and help and, you know, all that is all dominated by men. So as women, we just have to find that confidence and be like, I am what I'm say I am, and I'm going to convince you of that. And they have to be really consistent. They can't waver. So if they're going to open a business, they have to be 1,000% positive that this business is what they want to do, because they can't waver on it. Yeah, it's trial and error. And I'm a serial entrepreneur. And, you know, yeah, you try a business and it doesn't work. It's the same thing when you date somebody. You date them and a couple months in, you're like, yep, nope, this one's just not for me. We're not clicking. The communication's not there. It's the same thing with a business. You know, you have an idea, you try it. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But your general personality as a woman in business has to exude confidence, like, because otherwise you're never going to convince anyone to buy you.
Yeah.
Or buy your service or product.
You got to just keep trying, keep plugging away, keep pushing. But it starts with knowing who you are, what you're about, what you want to acquire, what you want to attain, and not,
exactly.
you know, not,
yep.
just continuing on. And that is a principle of success. And for anybody doing anything,
right,
living life. So anyway, hey, it's been great. I got to let you go. You probably have to let your dog out now.
Oh, he has run of the house. I have a doggy door. He comes and goes.
He comes and goes. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
What a life. What a life.
Yeah, I tell you.
That's great. But it's been a good time talking with you. How can people get a hold of you, Tracy?
Sure.
Email address, phone number, website, whatever.
Absolutely. So social media is one of the quickest ways, and they can find me at the Curvy, TheCurvy, Flipper, FLIPPER, across all social media channels. I haven't quite adopted TikTok yet, but I'm trying. It's just, it's exhausting. But Instagram, Facebook, the Curvy Flipper, email tracystern@gmail.com. So my name, I'm sure my name will be plastered somewhere.
All right, cool. All right.
But yeah, those are the best places to find me.
All right. All right. People out there watching this on internet, from internet land, anything you got for Tracy, questions or anything, maybe some advice, coaching from her, give her a shout, get on her social media, get on her email, and make something happen with her, because she'll help you, especially women, to persevere and the challenges that are set before you in life and in business. So anyway, folks, thanks for tuning in today. We've had a great time chit-chatting back and forth. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation. If you gained something from our conversation, and anything that Tracy can do for you, get in contact with her. Anything I can do for you, reach out to me, rstcoachingacademy.com, 386-286-2450 in Daytona Beach. We're at your service. We're here to help you. We're here to talk about money and how to make more of it. And I think Tracy's doing the right thing at the right time. She had the nerve to start out at the age of 47 and really transition into something new, and took the steps necessary to make it happen. So anyway, kudos to her. Thanks for tuning in, folks, and we'll see you next time around. All right. Thank you. And
thanks, Russ. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Hi, thanks for being here today for another episode of Money Talks. I hope it was informative and encouraging to you. If it struck a chord in your heart, or if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. Visit us at rstcoachingacademy.com, call 386-286-2450, or send an email to email@rstcoachingacademy.com. Thanks again, and until next time, be great.